This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. There's more on power987.co.za.
I'm Ayabong Atawe. Thank you for downloading this Power Business podcast.
The City of Joburg's council has held a meeting yesterday and adopted a first-of-its-kind inclusionary housing policy, which compels private developers to make 30% of the homes in all future residential developments, regardless of where these are built, affordable. And it's set to certainly have a major impact on housing developments in the city. I'm joined now on the line by the MMC for Development Planning within the City of Johannesburg, and that's Councillor Ruben Masangu. Councillor Masangu, good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ayabonga. Good afternoon to you and as well to your listeners.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Just briefly maybe explain to us the background of this particular process here. We do know that the council finally signed off on this issue, but that was probably the tail end of the development of this particular issue. Just briefly outline for us sort of when did this issue come before the council, and what was the role of the City of Joburg's administration in placing this before the council, and what was it trying to respond to?
Thank you, Abonga. Thank you for the opportunity to explain where we're coming from with this particular piece of legislation. As you know, that my department, one of the other things that it does, it deals with the planning in the city of Johannesburg. And one of the challenges that we are faced with is the apartheid spatial inequality that has been plaguing the city for some years. And with areas where we have seen so much development, and these developments do not cater for affordable housing accommodation, for lower income and middle income earners. So my department, through the Directorate of City Transformation and Planning, is the task to formulate policies to respond to what we call SPLUMA, the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act that directs us in terms of how we develop in the city of Johannesburg. So we also follow what is called the SDF of 2040. That is a framework of how we want development.
A special development framework, like, yeah.
Yes. So where we are with this, we had gone through a various participation on this program with the developers and all concerned. That led us then to say that how do we then in speed up or bring on board developers to assist in dealing with these inequalities, because we can see private developers are developing anywhere they would like. Then my directorate, then through the department, then formulated this policy, which is called now the Inclusionary Housing Policy, which seeks to say that to developers and future development, as you rightfully said, if you do any building development with a minimum of about 20 units and above, then that development must include at least 30% of inclusionary housing. This assists us as a city then to say that we bring inclusivity, because you know that maybe there might be areas in the city where our people will not be affording to stay, but you find that the work opportunities are along those places. So now this kind of developments will allow those kind of people that are looking for places of employment to live within areas of employment, because now in whatever establishment in the city of Johannesburg, there will be affordable accommodation for them. So precisely that's where we're going with this development.
And I guess this is in part a recognition of the continuing legacy of historic apartheid spatial planning, and the impact that that has on people who might be working in the core of the city but unfortunately are unable to afford to work in the city. And it has major implications for how our economy develops, and by extension how we deal with things like unemployment, where if you're living in Orange Farm, for instance, the likelihood of you being able to have, I guess, the social connections and the employment opportunities around you enough for you to transition into employment are limited by the spatial design of where, unfortunately, you've had to live.
Precisely. In fact, that's the primary role of the department. And we have taken a decision as a department to be aggressive in the way we address these issues, because we can't continuously have a city that is plagued by inequality, a city where our people are still in far-flung areas of job opportunities. So this is also another development from what we call the land use scheme that we've recently also passed through the assistance of council, which began in the 1st of February, which combines the different town schemes that we had in the city of Johannesburg, where there were 16 different schemes that were in the city of Johannesburg, and that made it very difficult for us to do law enforcement and other things related. So all of these policies, in fact, there's another policy that is still a talk of town recently, of about NODAR review that is also be coming through to council for consideration.
Yeah.
Because if we do not do those things, then we'll never be able to deal with these inequalities. And again, you know, when people stay close to work areas, when people live with their families in close work areas, productivity also comes into effect, as well as rightfully saying that the economy cannot function when circumstances are not made by government to allow a conducive environment. So this OS policy deals with some of these challenges. As you say, you know, people having traveling in the early hours of the morning, get to job, they are tired, they sleep in taxis. So we are saying as a government, we need to be drastical in terms of us at dealing with such things. And in the long run, we know that it might be difficult now, because anyway, when there's change, it always change comes with difficulty, because people are used to the status quo. But we are saying that as a department and as a government, we need to change that so that all we have one city, we have an inclusive city, and we have people staying close to work and places. And we've been developing as a city along the corridors, what we call the transit-oriented development corridors, because the what we need to focus on is movement of people than movement of cars, of so that we have people getting into public transport systems. So all of these policies talk to that particular agenda to say that we're building an inclusive city, and that has to respond as well to the economic needs of the city. So exactly this is what we are seeking to address. And what is exciting is that some of the developers, in fact, have been coming through to us and say that we are willing to engage with the city, we are willing to join into with this initiative that we are bringing in as a city. So we are grateful for those developers that are saying to us, this is the right way, we are willing to engage in this space because we want our people and we want an inclusive city. Yes.
I'd like us to maybe just hold there for MMC for a while there, just for a second. We need to quickly check in with what's happening in the world of news. But when we come back, I want us to maybe talk about technically how this is going to work. We've heard about, of course, you know, some of the rent thresholds here and the capping of rents and that kind of thing. And we'd love to hear from you about that. And just hold the line for us. We'll quickly check in with news. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation there. 6:30 is the time. Nomusa Zwane stands ready to give us some headlines.
Breaking down business like no other. Power Business with Ayabonga Tawe on Power 98.7.
27 minutes it is before the top of the hour. I'm in conversation with Councillor Ruben Masango, MMC for Development Planning within the city of Johannesburg. Now, MMC, the other question I'm quite interested in is, of course, how you are going to, one, enforce this particular provision, and how you're going to mobilize other parts of state support in the housing space to ensure that this becomes a viable reality. We've heard about, of course, the involvement of FLISP on this one, and also this issue of rent capping, which is aimed at saying some of these developers won't be allowed to charge more than 2,100 rand in rent, and all of this targeted at homes and households that are earning less than 7,000 rand.
Yes. Thank you so much, Abong. Maybe as well to just why we came to took a little bit long when for us to finalize this document. We had gone out in a public participation, as I've said earlier, with all the relevant stakeholders involved in this space. And I've said earlier that some of them are even willing to come on board. So we have, that's why we have made it mandatory, because we thought as well, if we make it voluntary, many people, they take long to come on board when something is voluntary. So we've made it mandatory for these developers to come on board on this particular issue. And once again, we'll continuously work. It might be, at the beginning, difficult for us to be able to fully find space to enforce it. But as we develop more processes within the department to see how we then enforce this. But what gives me comfort is that the developers are on board in the majority of them, because we've allowed extensive engagement, and the percentages that we've come up with, in the main, as much as council as well contributed in increasing the percentage to about 30%. But we still believe that that is still doable among our space, because as well what we're doing as a city, we're saying that we've got JOSHCO, we've got our housing department that releases units of affordable accommodation. But we thought, let's also bring on board the developers, because it's a contribution to what we're doing as government in the main, because we have been able to deliver. But with the challenges in terms of the backlogs of housing 300 units that we have, and in particular just dealing with these issues of inclusivity. We thought that then there's been on board as developers to come on board to assist us in this regard. So we'll be working with them when they submit plans to our department and how we look at those plans and then putting in measures in place for us to really do with the part of enforcement. And however, we've also made it so user-friendly because, as we have said, that we've got various options. The first option is the one that you have just alluded to, which talks to about when you have at least 20 units that in that building, then you allocate them for that affordable accommodation, which in the main talks to about that rental cap that we're talking about of people between 800 to about 2.1. We also have another option that allows the developers to decide rather than on units, but on floor space. You know, if you have a particular floor space, we have to allow that and then that floor space allocated for a particular affordable and low-cost housing. And as well, that option as well that deals with about 20% of the total residential floor area is also we need to expect at least 50% of that average units to be of that kind of style. Because we are saying that as much as we build these units, we do not want people to build different units for low-income earners. But that building as a whole must talk to be the similar units in the entire building so that it must not be, you must not feel as a low-income earner when you're in this building that you're inferior or what, sure. Because that's the issues that we're dealing with.
Okay.
And the last portion that we've also allowed for developers, because we understand this is still a new thing that they must go and they must come on board. But we have said that then you are free to come to the department to engage with us as a department to say that how are you going to, what ideas do you have to bring on board so that you can meet our requirements of a 30% inclusionary housing. So we've tried to make it as much as flexible and user friendly so that we encourage, so that it becomes easier even for the developers to be encouraged to get into this program that we have introduced.
The other thing I'm interested in, Ruben, here is when you did the public consultation process, we do know that by and large, the lion's share of people that made contributions were people from the developer universe. And yet, many of the people who would be affected here, oftentimes when we talk about mixed income developments and social housing, are often some of the residents in some of the areas where these developments will take place. We know of this phenomenon called NIMBYism, which is something I found very interesting, the not in my backyard kind of phenomenon, where many residents are saying we don't want to densify our area. We don't want to have, and it's a very sort of class-based kind of thing, we don't want to have poorer people in our community who are going to densify our area because it's going to have a certain impact on property value. Have you had any of those kind of views in the consultation process? And if so, how have you been able to engage those?
You know, Bonga, it's always so unfortunate, as I've said earlier, that when you bring change and when you're dealing with issues of redress, when you're dealing with issues of inequalities, you'll always have those challenges that you have in the community.
Sure.
But what I've always emphasized as I engage with these communities is to understand the purpose of the, of doing these policies in the, as a department. And that assists in the engagement to say that what is the line of engagement that you want to have with the department? Because some of the discussions when we engage with the, in particular, as we are saying, though, the residents in those particular areas, it's not necessarily about what we're trying to bring, but are other issues that are outside of the department's mandate, which then talks to us when we engage with them even further. Because as I've said to you, Ella, we still have other policies that talk to this issues of redress, which is another one, the nodal review, which specifically addresses what the concerns that they might be having on those different communities. But what then defeats the debate for our communities, for them not to understand, is that when you challenge the policy, not understanding what it seeks to achieve, then they're unable to contribute meaningfully into the debate. Because the issues of concern that we also consider as a department are issues of infrastructure, are issues of heritage, are issues of environment. So when any application comes into the department for consideration, we've got other departments within the city, your city power, your Johannesburg roads, your environment department, that that comments on any application presented and will never accept or never approve a development that doesn't have any comments from various departments. But beyond that as well, we need to bring policies and laws that allows us to manage the development in the city. If you look, Abonga and your listeners, is that developments are concentrated in areas of mid-range, they are concentrated in areas around Sandton. We are saying to developers, of course, places like Orange Farm places like that.
Sure.
But if you don't put policies in place to manage those kind of, because job opportunities are in these areas. So we need to then, as a department, to say that what are policies that we bring in place that will talk and control the levels of development, and as well allow us to deal with the enforcement of our laws. So this is the argument that I want our communities, in particular in these areas of densification, to understand, so that when they engage with the department, they engage in a way that is meaningful.
Mm.
And talk of issues around infrastructure, then it assists us, because there are other issues. The development is not just meant only just because of brick and mortar.
Sure.
You look at contribution, bulk contribution policies, you look at the look and feel of a building, you look at height, and all those kind of things must be of consideration. So these are the arguments that our residents in those areas must look into. But we cannot, as a city, then it be responsible of us not to put policies in place to control that particular development in those areas, because densification is happening anyway. So if we don't put policies in place, we'll never control those densification policies.
Okay.
And as a city, we are working so hard to work with other departments to see that, as a department in particular, how do we strengthen the ways we make comments, so that those comments, when they are made, are genuine comments and they talk to what the needs of the communities are, because those are the issues that they are raising. So we'll also be having the nodal review that is coming also in way to council, just to deal exactly with the issues that comes with developments. You know, look at issues of recreational facilities, we're looking at issues of as I've said, aid of clinics, of we're looking at areas of schools. So these are discussions that we must then engage with the communities when these new developments come. But we cannot postpone the issues of bringing inclusivity. We can't postpone the issues of dealing with inequalities. We can't postpone the issues of bringing people closer to their work environment. We can't continuously plan around congestion in the city. So people must stay with their families. And I know, as I've said earlier, that in the long run, it will be working better for everyone. Because if you've got families staying within this affordable accommodation, productivity happens, because people come home to their families, spend time with their children, and the economy grows in so doing. Because if you spend time with your families and you address the issues of challenges of inequalities, and you spend time in your homes, then you're able to look at assignments of your children than to travel in this road. So it will assist us in a great deal in the long run.
Councillor, thank you so much for coming through this evening and sharing your insights on this particular policy with us. And I must say kudos to you and the council here for certainly getting us somewhat started on this particular issue, because we've been talking about undoing the spatial legacy of apartheid certainly since time immemorial. And in particular, we even spoke about it in the National Development Plan that came out in 2012. And I guess this is the first of its kind by way of a council intentionally saying that we're going to put in place some regulations to ensure that we start doing this in some meaningful way. And I certainly hope that some of the other councils will follow suit.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for engaging with us, because this gives us a platform to explain to our communities exactly what is it that our role is and why do we bring these policies. And we are always open to engage with our residents at any time they need that. So thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you so much for your support as well as the station.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.